All right, welcome everyone. Let's dive into this stack of articles and excerpts all about wheat. When you sent these over, I gotta admit, I thought, okay, how much can there really be to say about wheat? It's just, you know, flour, bread, pasta, like that's it, right?
Not so fast.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot more to this humble grain than meets the eye. Its history is way more fascinating and impactful than most people realize, I think.
Okay, I'm intrigued. One of the first things that jumped out was wheat's role in shaping empires, like going all the way back to ancient Rome. Apparently, they were completely dependent on massive wheat imports, especially from Egypt, right?
Yeah, that's right. Imagine like an entire civilization relying on this one grain to the point that emperors guaranteed free or subsidized bread to a big chunk of the population. It was key to keeping the peace, not just, you know, feeding people.
Wow, so it was about social order too? That's pretty intense. It's kind of mind-boggling to think about the logistics of it all. Like this huge network of grain ships going back and forth across the Mediterranean, just bringing in enough wheat to feed, what, a city of a million people?
It's crazy, right? And get this. Sailing times from Egypt to Rome could actually be twice as long as the return trip, all because of the wind. It's not like they could just click order and have, you know, a million tons of grain show up. It took crazy planning and organization.
So, like, their whole empire basically hinged on the wind blowing the right way. That's a little unsettling. Any hiccup in that grain supply and things could have gone south real fast for the whole empire, right?
Absolutely. And you know what? We see that same reliance on wheat playing out centuries later, this time with the British Empire. They were actively pushing wheat production in their colonies, like Australia and Canada, to feed the growing population back home.
Ah, so they learned from the Romans, huh? Speaking of the Brits, what about those corn laws? I remember those from history class, something about trade restrictions, right?
Yeah, they were designed to protect British farmers, but when they were repealed in 1846, it set off a chain reaction. Globally, it had a way bigger impact than anyone probably expected.
Okay, so what happened? Like, how did it affect things?
Well, for one, food prices in Britain dropped, which meant people had more money to spend on other stuff.
Mm.
That fueled the economy, helped industrialization take off. A real turning point.
So it wasn't just some domestic issue, huh? This wheat thing was shaping international trade. Like, wow.
Exactly. It really reshaped global trade and, you know, contributed to the rise of those big trading empires we see in the modern world. There's this book, Merchants of Grain, by Dan Morgan, and he makes a really strong case that the repeal of the corn laws was a major turning point in history. Like, it shifted the way the whole world interacted.
It's pretty wild to think that something as, you know, seemingly basic as wheat could have such a huge impact. What other, like, hidden stories are buried in all this?
Well, one of the most unexpected things I came across was wheat's connection to war. I mean, seriously. Peter Frankopan, in his book The Silk Roads, actually argues that the Nazis' obsession with grabbing wheat supplies was a big part of why they invaded Russia.
Why, seriously, wheat helped start World War II? That's dotted in tense.
Yeah. Frankopan lays out this argument that Hitler and his crew, especially Goebbels, saw those huge wheat fields in Ukraine as the key to, like, feeding Europe and keeping their war machine running. There was even this chilling plan called the Hunger Plan that aimed to seize Ukrainian grain and, like, deliberately starve millions of Slavs.
Nah, that's a dark thought. It's hard to believe that something like wheat could be a factor in such a horrible conflict.
Right. It's a complex issue, for sure, and the Nazi invasion had multiple causes, no doubt.
Yeah.
But Frankopan's work really shows how much food security played into their, you know, their strategic thinking.
Yeah, it makes you think about food as more than just what we eat. It's a national security issue. Like, who controls the food controls a lot of power.
Absolutely. And, you know, even World War I has a wheat connection. The Allies were super dependent on American wheat shipments. And there was even an attempt to, like, cut off those supplies. They targeted a warehouse in New York Harbor.
Wait, wasn't that the explosion that blackened the Statue of Liberty? I totally forgot about that.
Yep, that's the one. It just goes to show how food security and global politics are totally intertwined. Like, controlling essential resources like wheat can be a huge power move in peacetime or war.
Okay, so wheat has been part of empires and wars. But what about the grain itself? Like, how has it changed over time?
Ooh, that's where things get really interesting. Wheat today is, like, the result of thousands of years of human intervention and breeding. It's super different from its wild ancestors. You know, einkorn, emmer, those kinds of wheat had seed heads that would just shatter and scatter seeds everywhere.
So, like, the opposite of what we want in a crop. No wonder it took so long to figure out how to grow it properly.
Right. It was this long, slow process of selecting for traits that would make wheat a reliable food source. Non-shattering seed heads, lodging resistance, higher yields.
Yeah.
It's amazing to think about those early farmers, you know, picking the best seeds year after year and slowly transforming these wild grasses into a staple crop.
Yeah. And then boom, the Green Revolution comes along. That's when wheat yields really skyrocketed, right?
Yeah.
Mid-20th century.
Exactly. That's where Norman Borlaug comes in, the father of the Green Revolution. He's kind of legendary for developing these high-yielding, disease-resistant dwarf wheat varieties.
His work had a huge impact. Like, I know India went from facing constant famine to being able to feed itself.
Absolutely. Borlaug's wheat, along with modern farming methods, really changed everything.
Yeah.
He's credited with saving millions of lives from starvation. It's a testament to the power of science, right, to actually tackle global issues.
Yeah, it's amazing to think that one person focused on this one grain could make such a difference.
His story should be way more well known. But the evolution of wheat doesn't stop with genetics.
Mm.
We also had to talk about how we harvest and process it, because that's had a massive transformation too.
Oh, right. It's not like those ancient Egyptians just tossing seeds in the Nile mud and letting their cattle stomp on them anymore.
Nope. From those early days, you see the sickle develop, which people still use today, by the way. Then came the scythe, forever linked to, you know, that Grim Reaper image.
And then, bam, the Industrial Revolution. Everything changes.
Yep. Mechanical reapers show up in the 1800s, and those were a huge leap forward. But it was the combine harvester that really revolutionized things. This one machine could reap, thresh, and winnow all at once. Harvesting wheat went from taking forever to being so much faster and easier.
I read about the sunshine harvester they developed in Australia. It cut the harvesting time from like 46 hours per acre down to 30 minutes. Wow. Talk about a productivity boost.
Right. And that freed up so much human labor, paving the way for modern agriculture. It's wild to think about it. The bread we eat today is the direct result of centuries of humans figuring out how to work with this one grain.
Okay, so we've gone from ancient origins to empires, wars, and tech advancements. What about the modern wheat market? What's happening with this global commodity now?
Well, buckle up, because there are definitely some surprises in store. The modern wheat market is constantly changing and way more complex than most people realize.
Okay, I'm ready for some surprises. Let's get into this world of wheat trading. All right, so yeah, wheat is definitely not simple. You mentioned some surprises in the modern wheat market. So where do we even start with all that?
Well, first off, get this. The U.S. isn't the world's top wheat producer.
Really? Huh. I just kind of assumed.
Nope, it's actually China that holds that title. The U.S. is a big player, of course, but when it comes to exports, it's Russia that dominates. And here's another twist. Egypt, you know, the ancient breadbasket for the Romans, they're the biggest importer now.
Wow. Talk about a role reversal. So the world's wheat situation has really shifted around. What about the trading itself? Is it still like, you know, giant ships full of grain going from one country to another?
It's definitely changed. We had some insights from Fausto Felice as a wheat trader, been in the game for a long time, and he talked about how the market has moved away from those massive government-to-government deals. Now it's way more diverse with all these specialized players.
So instead of like bulk orders, it's more about finding specific types of wheat.
Exactly. Felice even said, wheat is not wheat. Like, there are so many varieties, each with its own qualities, that make it good for specific uses or, you know, that people in certain regions prefer. It's almost like wine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have experts who can tell the difference between, like, a Cabernet from Napa and one from Bordeaux.
So there's Durum wheat for pasta, and then there's that hard red spring wheat for bread. Okay, I'm starting to get it. It's way more complex than I thought.
Yeah. Felice's advice for new traders is to really become wheat connoisseurs, learning everything about the different types, where they come from, how they all relate.
It sounds like it takes real skill to navigate this whole wheat market.
Yeah.
You need to understand, like, not just the grain, but also politics, export taxes, all sorts of factors.
Exactly. It's a whole world unto itself. Oh, and we can't forget about the elephant in the room, gluten.
Ah, right. The gluten controversy. Seems like everyone has a strong opinion on gluten these days.
No, it's definitely a hot topic. Mm. On one hand, gluten is what gives bread that great texture, that springiness. But for some people, it can trigger some health issues.
Yeah, like celiac disease, which is pretty serious. If you have that and you eat gluten, it can really damage your intestines.
Right. And then there's non-celiac gluten sensitivity. That one's less understood. But it can cause a whole range of symptoms. from bloating to fatigue.
I know. It's tough to know what to believe about gluten sometimes. There's so much info out there. I remember reading that book, Wheat Belly, I think, by William Davis. He was saying that modern wheat is addictive and makes people gain weight.
Yeah, Davis's book is definitely controversial. His views aren't really supported by the mainstream science on gluten. It's still an area where researchers are figuring things out, you know, like how gluten affects people differently.
Right. It seems like it's best to listen to your own body and talk to a doctor if you're worried. But it's crazy that we're even having this conversation about one single ingredient in our food.
It just goes to show how powerful this grain is. And believe it or not, its influence goes even further than you might think. Wheat has even found its way into literature.
Wait, what? Like novels about wheat farming?
Not exactly. We have some excerpts from this guy, Frank Norris. He was an American novelist back in the early 1900s, and he was kind of obsessed with wheat. He made it a central theme in his novels.
Okay, so what was he writing about? Like the health benefits of whole wheat or something?
Think less about nutrition and more about like epic over-the-top descriptions of wheat fields as vast silent oceans. He even personified the earth, like giving it a desire to be plowed. It gets a little weird, honestly.
Okay, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, interesting is one word for it. His writing style is definitely unique. But here's the thing. Despite all the quirks, Norris's novels give us this glimpse into early 20th century agriculture. And get this, he actually makes some pretty accurate predictions about China's rise as a global power and how the grain trade would get more complex.
So he was ahead of his time in a way. That's kind of cool.
It really is. It just goes to show that wheat has inspired all kinds of creative minds throughout history, even if their take on it is a little out there.
Okay, so we've covered ancient empires, modern markets, the science of wheat, and even some weird literature. But what about the future? What's next for this grain in a world that's dealing with climate change, all sorts of global instability, and, you know, people's diets are always changing?
Well, that's where Denis Vosnesensky's work comes in. He's done some really fascinating research on how things like wars and government policies have affected wheat markets throughout history. His insights offer some valuable lessons for the future.
Yeah, we talked about how important wheat is for global food security. Things can get pretty intense when there's like a conflict or a natural disaster.
Right. And Vosnesensky's research really gets into the heart of that.
Sounds like a great place to pick up in part three. We've covered so much already, and I'm eager to hear what Vosnesensky has to say about the future of wheat. Okay, so we're back, ready to wrap up our wheat exploration. It sounds like we're shifting gears now, going from looking back at history to thinking about the future.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Denis Vosnesensky's work really digs into how, like, big global events, wars, government policies, that kind of thing, have shaped wheat markets over time. And he tries to figure out what lessons we can learn from that, you know, for the challenges that are coming up.
We've talked about how crucial wheat is for keeping people fed all over the world, so... Yeah, I can imagine things get pretty crazy when there's a war or a big disaster somewhere.
Right. And Vosnesensky went deep on this. He actually analyzed something like 3,000 newspaper articles from World War I and World War II just to see how wheat markets reacted during those times.
Wow, 3,000 articles. That's commitment. So what were the big takeaways for you? What really stood out from all that research?
Well, one of the things that hit me was how wars, even if they're far away, can really expose the weak points in like how we get food from one place to another.
Yeah.
Even for something as basic as wheat, which grows, you know, all over. He uses Australia as a kind of a case study for this.
Australia? Okay. Are they a big wheat producer?
Oh, yeah. Big time. Australia is one of the world's top wheat exporters. But here's the thing. They're super reliant on ships to get that wheat to the rest of the world. And that's where the vulnerability comes in.
Right. So if something happens to those shipping routes, like a conflict, a pandemic, who knows, it could mess up the whole system, right?
Exactly. Imagine. Even a country that has tons of wheat could have trouble getting it to the people who need it. Prices could spike. There could be shortages. It's a domino effect.
Yeah. It's a reminder that we're all connected. You know, something that happens on the other side of the world can really affect us here. Like literally what ends up on our plates.
And those historical lessons are even more important now because, I mean, think about it. We just lived through a pandemic, and the war in Ukraine is still happening.
Right. Those events really shook up the global food system. Prices went crazy for a while.
Yeah. Vosnesensky says that while the wheat market did prove to be pretty resilient, those events were a wake-up call. He's worried that future conflicts could cause even more disruption.
Especially with some countries putting bans on exports, right? Like when they want to protect their own supplies during a crisis.
Yeah, that's a tough one. On the one hand, it makes sense for a government to make sure its own people have enough to eat, you know, when things are rough. But when those export bans happen, it sets off this chain reaction across global markets.
So it's a balancing act. How do you ensure your own food security without, like, accidentally making things worse for other countries that depend on those imports?
Right. And Voznesensky thinks we need more international cooperation to deal with this kind of stuff. He points to the pandemic, how countries were, like, outbidding each other for masks and vaccines.
Oh, yeah. It was like a free-for-all.
Exactly. And he's worried it could happen with food, too. Imagine countries hoarding wheat, driving up prices, and the people who are already vulnerable just can't get access to this basic food.
That's a scary thought. So what can we do to make the global wheat market more stable, like less vulnerable to this kind of disruption?
Well, Voznesensky has some interesting ideas. One that stood out to me was his suggestion that Australia should start a domestic biofuel industry.
Biofuel? Huh. I wouldn't have thought of that. How would that help with the wheat situation?
It's kind of clever, actually. By using some of their extra wheat to make biofuel, Australia would create, like, a buffer against those wild price swings on the global market.
So it's a way to protect themselves, like a backup plan, if export markets get messed up.
Exactly. Plus, it means they wouldn't be so dependent on imported oil, which, you know, is another risk when things are unstable. And it helped with cutting emissions, too.
Okay, so that's hitting, like, three birds with one stone: the economy, the environment, and energy security.
Right. And Voznesensky is really clear that this kind of thing needs to happen before a crisis hits. Like, it's way harder to scramble and build a biofuel industry in the middle of, you know, a war or a pandemic.
Yeah, that makes sense. An ounce of prevention, right?
Exactly. If Australia took those steps now, they'd be more resilient themselves, and they could play a more stable role in the global market.
It's kind of amazing how Voznesensky brings all these different things together, you know? Wheat, war, weather patterns, government actions, biofuels. It's all connected.
He really shows how actions in one place can ripple out and affect things everywhere else.
Yeah.
It's a call for a more strategic, big picture way of, like, managing our food systems.
Makes you think, for sure. I'm curious about governments in all this. We've talked about export bans, but what about other ways governments get involved?
Well, Voznesensky is pretty wary of too much government interference in wheat markets. He says that even when they're trying to help, you know, policies like price controls or subsidies can sometimes backfire and cause more problems.
So instead of stabilizing things, they could actually make the market more volatile.
Yep. He talks about the International Wheat Agreement, which was an attempt to, like, control global wheat prices and supplies back in the mid-20th century. It was well-intentioned, but didn't really work out and was eventually abandoned.
It's a good reminder that trying to control these complex global systems, it's really hard to get it right.
Yeah, and there can be unintended consequences. Voznesensky also brings up this kind of scary idea of OPEC for wheat. Like, what if the big wheat exporting countries formed a group and tried to manipulate global prices?
Ooh, like a wheat cartel. But wouldn't that be hard to pull off? I mean, unlike oil, which is mostly in a few specific places, wheat is grown all over the world.
He thinks it's unlikely for that reason, but he doesn't rule it out entirely, especially with, you know, global tensions rising and countries looking for any advantage they can get.
It's a reminder of how much is riding on food security, huh? It's not just economics. It's like global stability and human well-being.
Absolutely. In a world where it feels like the challenges to our food systems are just getting bigger and bigger, it's so important to understand these dynamics, you know, so we can make good choices as consumers, as citizens, as participants in this whole global economy.
So where do we go from here? What does the future hold for wheat?
Ooh, that's the big question, isn't it? We're facing some pretty unprecedented challenges. Climate change, population growth, people's diets are changing. I'm actually optimistic. There's a lot of really cool research and innovation happening in the world of wheat right now.
Yeah. I've read about these efforts to develop wheat that can survive droughts and resist diseases. That seems like a big deal, with weather patterns getting so unpredictable.
Exactly. Scientists are using all these cutting-edge techniques, gene editing and stuff, to create wheat that can withstand harsh conditions, that doesn't need as many pesticides and fertilizers. They're trying to make it more sustainable, too.
And what about the nutritional side of things? Can they make wheat even healthier?
Definitely. There's this growing focus on what they call biofortification, basically breeding wheat that has more of the nutrients people need, like iron, zinc, vitamins. That could be huge for tackling malnutrition around the world.
So we're talking about, like, super wheat. It can handle the changing climate. It's packed with nutrients. Maybe it can even fight off zombies. Okay, maybe not that last part.
Well, you never know. But seriously, the progress in wheat production is really amazing. And don't forget about precision agriculture. They're using all this technology to, like, optimize every aspect of farming.
So using data and sensors to make wheat farming smarter and more efficient?
Yep. It's about using resources more effectively, creating less waste, and reducing the impact on the environment.
It sounds like the future of wheat is all about being adaptable and, like, reinventing itself, taking this ancient grain and figuring out how it fits into the modern world, and, of course, finding delicious new ways to eat it.
Exactly. It's about blending tradition and innovation, recognizing how important wheat has been for feeding humanity, but also always looking for ways to make it better.
You know, I have to admit, I came into this whole deep dive with a lot of assumptions about wheat, but I've learned so much. I have a whole new respect for this grain.
It's been quite a journey, hasn't it? From those ancient empires to the complex global market we have today, from the science of genetics to, you know, the simple act of baking bread. We've uncovered hidden histories, surprising connections. It's been really cool.
And I think it's safe to say that the story of wheat isn't over. Like, we're still writing it, and we're all a part of that story, whether we realize it or not.
That's a great point. And to our listener, thank you so much for sending us all these fascinating sources. It's clear you're curious and you love to learn. Keep exploring, keep asking questions, and, you know, keep discovering all the amazing things that are out there in the world.
And hey, next time you're enjoying a piece of bread or a big bowl of pasta or even some cookies, take a second to think about the incredible journey that wheat has taken to get to your plate. It's a story that connects us all.